41. After that, I began to see other problems. I write this record now, says it read out loud, pounding it into a metal slab, because I am afraid. Afraid for myself, yes. I admit to being human. If Allende does return from the Well of Ascension, I am certain that my death will be one of his first objectives. He is not an evil man, but he is a ruthless one. That is, I think, a product of what he has been through. That fits what we know of Allende from the logbook, Tyndall said, assuming that Allende is that author's book. Sazed glanced at his pile of notes, running over the basics in his mind. Quan had been an ancient Terrace scholar. He had discovered Allende, a man he began to think, through his studies, might be the hero of ages, a figure from Terrace prophecy. Allende had listened to him, and had become a political leader. He had conquered much of the world, then traveled north to the Well of Ascension. By then, however, Quan had apparently changed his mind about Allende, and had tried to stop him from getting to the well. It fit together. Even though the logbook author never mentioned his own name, it was obvious that he was Allende. It is a very safe assumption, I think, Sazed said. The logbook even speaks of Quan, and the falling out they had. They sat beside each other in Sazed's rooms. He had requested and received a larger desk to hold their multitudinous notes and scribbled theories. Beside the door sat the remnants of their afternoon meal, a soup they had hurriedly gulped down. Sazed itched to take the dishes down to the kitchens, but he hadn't been able to pull himself away yet.
Continue,
Tyndall requested, sitting back in her chair, looking more relaxed than Sazed had ever seen her. The rings running down the sides of her ears alternated in color, a gold or copper followed by a tin or iron. It was such a simple thing, but there was a beauty to it.
Sazed?
Sazed started.
I apologize, he said,
then turned back to his reading. I am also afraid, however, that I have known that my story will be forgotten. I am afraid for the world that may come, afraid because my plans failed, afraid of a doom brought by the deepness.
Wait, Tyndall said. Why did he fear that?
Why would he not? Sazed asked. The deepness, which we assume is the mist, was killing his people. Without sunlight, their crops would not grow, and their animals could not graze.
But if Quan feared the deepness, then he should not have opposed Allende, Tyndall said. He was climbing to the Well of Ascension to defeat the deepness.
Yes, Sazed said. But by then Quan was convinced that Allende wasn't the hero of ages.
But why would that matter? Tyndall said. It didn't take a specific person to stop the mists. Rashik's success proves that. Here, skip to the end. Read that passage about Rashik.
I have a young nephew, one Rashik, Sazed read. He hates all of Hellenium with the passion of envious youth. He hates Allende even more acutely, though the two have never met. For Rashik feels betrayed that one of our oppressors should have been chosen as the hero of ages. Allende will need guides through the Terrace Mountains. I have charged Rashik with making certain that he and his trusted friends are chosen as those guides. Rashik is to try and lead Allende in the wrong direction, to discourage him or otherwise foil his quest. Allende won't know that he has been deceived. If Rashik fails to lead Allende astray, then I have instructed the lad to kill my former friend. It is a distant hope. Allende has survived assassins, wars, and catastrophes. And yet I hope that in the frozen mountains of Terrace, he may finally be exposed. I hope for a miracle. Allende must not reach the Well of Ascension. He must not take the power for himself.
Tyndall sat back, frowning.
What?
Something is wrong there, I think, she said. But I cannot tell you precisely what.
Sazed scanned the text again.
Let us break it down to simple statements, then. Rashik, the man who became the Lord Ruler, was Quan's nephew.
Yes, Tyndall said.
Quan sent Rashik to mislead or even kill his once friend, Alendi the Conqueror, a man climbing the mountains of Terrace to seek the Well of Ascension.
Tyndall nodded.
Quan did this because he feared what would happen if Alendi took the well's power for himself.
Tyndall raised a finger.
Why did he fear that? It seems a rational fear, I think, Sazed said.
Too rational, Tyndall replied. Or rather, perfectly rational. But tell me, Sazed, when you read Elendi's logbook, did you get the impression that he was the type who would take that power for himself?
Sazed shook his head.
Actually, the opposite. That is part of what made the logbook so confusing. We couldn't figure out why the man represented within would have done as we assumed he must have. I think that is part of what eventually led Vin to guess that the Lord Ruler wasn't Alendi at all, but Rashik, his pack-man.
And Quan says that he knew Alendi well, Tyndall said. In fact, in this very rubbing, he compliments the man on several occasions. Calls him a good person, I believe.
Yes, Sazed said, finding the passage. He is a good man. Despite it all, he is a good man. A sacrificing man. In truth, all of his actions, all of the deaths, destructions, and pains that he has caused, have hurt him deeply.
So, Quan knew Alendi well, Tyndall said, and thought highly of him. He also, presumably, knew his nephew Rashik well. Do you see my problem?
Sazed nodded slowly.
Why send a man of wild temperament, one whose motivations are based on envy and hatred, to kill a man you thought to be good and of worthy temperament? It does seem an odd choice.
Exactly, Tyndall said, resting her arms on the table.
But, Sazed said, Quan says right here that he doubts that if Alendi reaches the Well of Ascension, he will take the power and then, in the name of the greater good, give it up.
Tyndall shook her head.
It doesn't make sense, Sazed. Quan wrote several times about how he feared the deepness, but then he tried to foil the hope of stopping it by sending a hateful youth to kill a respected and presumably wise leader. Quan practically set up Rashik to take the power. If letting Alendi take the power was such a concern, wouldn't he have feared that Rashik might do the same? Perhaps we simply see things with the clarity of those regarding events that have already occurred, Sazed said.
Tyndall shook her head.
We're missing something, Sazed. Quan is a very rational, even deliberate man. One can tell that from his narrative. He was the one who discovered Alendi, and was the first to tout him as the Hero of Ages. Why would he turn against him as he did?
Sazed nodded, flipping through his translation of the rubbing. Quan had gained much notoriety by discovering the hero. He found the place he was looking for. There was a place for me in the lore of the anticipation, the text read. I thought myself the announcer, the prophet foretold to discover the Hero of Ages. Renouncing Alendi then would have been to renounce my new position, my acceptance by the others.
Something dramatic must have happened, Tyndall said. Something that would make him turn against his friend, the source of his own fame. Something that pricked his conscience so sharply that he was willing to risk opposing the most powerful monarch in the land. Something so frightening that he took a ridiculous chance by sending this Rashik on an assassination mission.
Sazed leafed through his notes.
He fears both the deepness and what would happen if Alendi took the power. Yet he cannot seem to decide which one is the greater threat, and neither seems more present in the narrative than the other. Yes, I can see the problem here. Do you think, perhaps, Quan was trying to imply something by the inconsistency in his own arguments?
Perhaps, Tyndall said. The information is just so slim.
I cannot judge a man without knowing the context of his life.
Sazed looked up, eyeing her.
Perhaps we have been studying too hard, he said. Shall we take a break?
Tyndall shook her head.
We don't have time, Sazed.
He met her eyes. She was right on that point.
You sense it too, don't you? She asked.
He nodded.
This city will soon fall. The forces pressing upon it, the armies, the Kolos, the civil confusion.
I fear it will be more violent than your friends hope, Sazed, Tyndall said quietly. They seem to believe that they can just continue to juggle their problems.
They are an optimistic group, he said with a smile. Unaccustomed to being defeated.
This will be worse than the revolution, Tyndall said. I have studied these things, Sazed. I know what happens when a conqueror takes a city. People will die. Many people.
Sazed felt a chill at her words. There was a tension to Luthadel. War was coming to the city. Perhaps one army or another would enter by the blessing of the assembly, but the other would still strike. The walls of Luthadel would run red when the siege finally ended. And he feared that end was coming very, very soon.
You are right, he said, turning back to the notes on his desktop. We must continue to study. We should collect more of what we can find about the land before the ascension, so that you may have the context you seek.
She nodded, showing a fatalistic resolve. This was not a task they could complete in the time they had. Deciphering the meaning of the rubbing, comparing it to the logbook, and relating it to the context of the period, was a scholarly undertaking that would require the determined work of years. Keepers had much knowledge, but in this case it was almost too much. They had been gathering and transmitting records, stories, myths, and legends for so long that it took years for one keeper to recite the collected works to a new initiate. Fortunately, included with the mass of information were indexes and summaries created by the keepers. On top of this came the notes and personal indexes each individual keeper made. And yet those only helped the keeper understand just how much information he had. Sazed himself had spent his life reading, memorizing, and indexing religions. Each night before he slept, he read some portion of a note or story. He was probably the world's foremost scholar on pre-ascension religions, and yet he felt as if he knew so little. Compounding all of that was the inherent unreliability of their information. A great deal of it came from the mouths of simple people, doing their best to remember what their lives had once been like, or more often what the lives of their grandparents had once been like. The keepers hadn't been founded until late in the 2nd century of the Lord Ruler's reign. By then, many religions had already been wiped out in their pure forms. Sazed closed his eyes, dumped another index from a copper mine into his head, then began to search it. There wasn't much time, true, but Tyndall and he were keepers. They were accustomed to beginning tasks that others would have to finish. Elend Venture, once king of the Central Dominance, stood on the balcony of his keep overlooking the vast city of Luthadel. Though the first snows had yet to fall, the weather had grown cold. He wore an overcloak, tied at the front, but it didn't protect his face. A chill tingled his cheeks as a wind blew across him, whipping at his cloak. Smoke rose from chimneys, gathering like an ominous shadow above the city before rising up to meld with the ashen red sky. For every house that produced smoke, there were two that did not. Many of those were probably deserted. The city held nowhere near the population it once had. However, he knew that many of those smokeless houses were still inhabited. Inhabited and freezing.
I should have been able to do more for them, Elend thought, eyes open to the piercing cold wind. I should have found a way to get more coal. I should have managed to provide for them all.
It was humbling, even depressing, to admit that the Lord Ruler had done better than Elend himself. Despite being a heartless tyrant, The Lord Ruler had at least kept a significant portion of the population from starving or freezing. He had kept armies in check, and had kept crime at a manageable level. To the northeast, the Kolos army waited. It had sent no emissaries to the city, but it was more frightening than either Set's or Straff's armies. The cold wouldn't scare away its occupants. Despite their bare skin, they apparently took little notice of weather changes. This final army was the most disturbing of the three, more dangerous, more unpredictable, and impossible to deal with. Kolos did not bargain. "We haven't been paying enough attention to that threat," he thought as he stood on the balcony. "There's just been so much to do, so much to worry about, that we couldn't focus on an army that might be as dangerous to our enemies as it is to us." It was looking less and less likely that the Kolos would attack Set or Straff. Apparently Jastes was enough in control to keep them waiting to take a shot at Luthadel itself.
"Milord," said a voice from behind. "Please come back in. That's a fell wind. No use killing yourself from a chill."
Elend turned back. Captain Demu stood dutifully in the room, along with another bodyguard. In the aftermath of the assassination attempt, Ham had insisted that Elend go about guarded. Elend hadn't complained, though he knew there was little reason for caution anymore. Straff wouldn't want to kill him now that he wasn't king. "So earnest," Elend thought, studying Dumu's face.
"Why do I find him youthful? We're nearly the same age."
"Very well," Elend said, turning and striding into the room. As Dumu closed the balcony doors, Elend removed his cloak. The suit below felt wrong on him. Sloppy, even though he had ordered it cleaned and pressed. The vest was too tight, his practice with the sword was slowly modifying his body, while the coat hung loosely. "Demu," Elend said, "when is your next survivor rally?"
"Tonight, my lord."
Elend nodded. He'd feared that. It would be a cold night.
"My lord," Demu said, "do you still intend to come?"
"Of course," Elend said. "I gave my word that I would join with your cause."
"That was before you lost the vote, my lord."
"That is immaterial," Elend said. "I am joining your movement because it is important to the Ska, Demu, and I want to understand the will of my... of the people. I promised you dedication, and you shall have it." Demu seemed a bit confused, but spoke no further. Elend eyed his desk, considering some studying, but found it hard to motivate himself in the chill room. Instead, he pushed open the door and strode out into the hallway. His guards followed. He stopped himself from turning toward Vin's rooms. She needed her rest, and it didn't do her much good to have him peeking in every half hour to check on her. So instead, he turned to wander down a different passageway. The back hallways of Keep Venture were tight, dark stone constructions of labyrinthine complexity. Perhaps it was because he'd grown up in these passages, but he felt at home in their dark, secluded confines. They had been the perfect place for a young man who didn't really care to be found. Now he used them for another reason. The corridors provided a perfect place for extended walking. He didn't point himself in any particular direction, he just moved, working out his frustration to the beating of his own footsteps. "I can't fix the city's problems," he told himself. "I have to let Penrod handle that. He's the one the people want." That should have made things easier for Elend. It let him focus on his own survival, not to mention let him spend more time revitalizing his relationship with Vin. She, however, seemed different lately. Elend tried to tell himself it was just her injury, but he sensed something deeper. Something in the way she looked at him, something in the way she reacted to his affection. And despite himself, he could think of only one thing that had changed. He was no longer king. Vin was not shallow. She had shown him nothing but devotion and love during their 2 years together. And yet how could she not react, even if unconsciously, to his colossal failure? During the assassination attempt, he had watched her fight. Really watched her fight for the first time. Until that day, he hadn't realized just how amazing she was. She wasn't just a warrior, and she wasn't just an allomancer. She was a force, like thunder or wind. The way she had killed that last man, smashing his head with her own.
How could she love a man like me, he thought. I couldn't even hold my throne. I wrote the very laws that deposed me.
He sighed, continuing to walk. He felt like he should be scrambling, trying to figure out a way to convince Vin that he was worthy of her. But that would just make him seem more incompetent. There was no correcting past mistakes, especially since he could see no real mistakes he had made. He had done the best he could, and that had proven insufficient. He paused at an intersection. Once, a relaxing dip into a book would have been enough to calm him. Now he felt nervous, tense, a little like he assumed Vin usually felt.
Maybe I could learn from her, he thought. What would Vin do in my situation?
She certainly wouldn't just wander around brooding and feeling sorry for herself. Ellen frowned, looking down at a hallway lighted by flickering oil lamps, only half of them lit. Then he took off, walking with a determined stride toward a particular set of rooms. He knocked quietly and got no response. Finally, he poked his head in. Sazed and Tyndall sat quietly before a desk piled high with scraps of paper and ledgers. They both sat staring, as if at nothing, their eyes bearing the glazed over look of someone who had been stunned. Sazed's hand rested on the table, Tyndall's rested on top of it. Sazed shook himself alert suddenly, turning to regard Elland.
"Lord Venture! I am sorry, I did not hear you enter."
"It's all right, Saze," Elland said, walking into the room. As he did, Tyndall shook awake as well, and she removed her hand from Sazed's. Elland nodded to Demu and his companion, who were still following, indicating that they should remain outside, then closed the door.
"Elland,"
Tyndall said, her voice laced with its typical undercurrent of displeasure.
"What is your purpose in bothering us? You have already proven your incompetence quite soundly. I see no need for further discussion."
"This is still my home, Tyndall," Elland replied. "Insult me again, and you will find yourself ejected from the premises." Tyndall raised an eyebrow. Sazed paled.
"Lord Venture," he said quickly, "I don't think that Tyndall meant to—"
"It's all right, Sazed," Elland said, raising a hand. "She was just testing to see if I had reverted back to my previous state of insultability." Tyndall shrugged.
"I have heard reports of your moping through the palace hallways like a lost child."
"Those reports are true," Elland said, "but that doesn't mean that my pride is completely gone."
"Good,"
Tyndall said, nodding to a chair.
"Seat yourself, if you wish."
Elland nodded, pulling the chair over before the two and sitting. "I need advice."
"I've given you what I can already," Tyndall said. "In fact, I've perhaps given you too much. My continued presence here makes it seem that I'm taking sides."
"I'm not king anymore," Elland said. "Therefore I have no side. I'm just a man seeking truth." Tyndall smiled.
"Ask your questions, then."
Sazed watched the exchange with obvious interest.
"I know," Elland thought. "I'm not sure I understand our relationship either."
"Here is my problem," he said. "I lost the throne, essentially, because I wasn't willing to lie."
"Explain,"
Tyndall said. "I had a chance to obscure a piece of law," Elland said. "At the last moment, I could have made the Assembly take me as king. Instead, I gave them a bit of information that was true, but which ended up costing me the throne."
"I'm not surprised," Tyndall said.
"I doubted that you would be," Elland said. "Now, do you think I was foolish to do as I did?"
"Yes."
Elland nodded.
"But," Tyndall said, "that moment isn't what cost you the throne, Elland Venture. That moment was a small thing, far too simple to credit with your large-scale failure. You lost the throne because you wouldn't command your armies to secure the city, because you insisted on giving the Assembly too much freedom, and because you don't employ assassins or other forms of pressure. In short, Elend Venture, you lost the throne because you are a good man.
Elend shook his head. Can you not be both a good man who follows his conscience and a good king, then? Tyndall frowned in thought.
You ask an age-old question, Elend, Sazed said quietly. A question that monarchs, priests, and humble men of destiny have always asked. I do not know that there is an answer.
Should I have told the lie, Sazed? Elend asked.
No, Sazed said, smiling. Perhaps another man should have, in your same position. But a man must be cohesive with himself. You have made your decisions in life, and changing yourself at the last moment, telling this lie, would have been against who you are. It is better for you to have done as you did, and lost the throne, I think.
Tyndall frowned.
His ideals are nice, Sazed. But what of the people? What if they die because Elend wasn't capable of controlling his own conscience? I do not wish to argue with you, Tyndall, Sazed said. It is simply my opinion that he chose well. It is his right to follow his conscience, then trust in Providence to fill in the holes caused by the conflict between morality and logic.
Providence? You mean God, Elend said.
I do.
Elend shook his head. What is God, Sazed, but a device used by obligators?
Why do you make the choices that you do, Elend Venture?
Because they're right, Elend said.
And why are these things right?
I don't know, Elend said with a sigh, leaning back. He caught a disapproving glance from Tyndall at his posture, but he ignored her. He wasn't king. He could slouch if he wanted to. You talk of God, Sazed, but don't you preach of 100 different religions?
300, actually, Sazed said.
Well, which one do you believe? Elend asked.
I believe them all.
Elend shook his head. That doesn't make sense. You've only pitched a half dozen to me, but I can already see that they're incompatible.
It is not my position to judge truth, Lord Venture, Sazed said, smiling. I simply carry it.
Elend sighed. Priests, he thought. Sometimes talking to Sazed is like talking to an obligator.
Elend, Tyndall said, her tone softening. I think you handled this situation in the wrong way. However, Sazed does have a point. You were true to your own convictions, and that is a regal attribute, I think.
And what should I do now? He asked.
Whatever you wish, Tyndall said. It was never my place to tell you what to do. I simply gave you knowledge of what men in your place did in the past.
And what would they have done? Elend asked. These great leaders of yours. How would they have reacted to my situation?
It is a meaningless question, she said. They would not have found themselves in this situation, for they would not have lost their titles in the first place.
Is that what it's about, then? Elend asked. The title?
Isn't that what we were discussing? Tyndall asked.
Elend didn't answer. What do you think makes a man a good king? He had once asked of Tyndall.
Trust, she had replied.
A good king is one who is trusted by his people, and one who deserves that trust. Elend stood up. Thank you, Tyndall, he said.
Tyndall frowned in confusion, then turned to Sazed.
He looked up and met Elend's eyes, cocking his head slightly. Then he smiled.
Come, Tyndall, he said. We should return to our studies. His Majesty has work to do, I think.
Tyndall continued to frown as Elend left the room. His guards followed behind as he quickly strode down the hallway. I won't go back the way I was, Elend thought. I won't continue to fret and worry. Tyndall taught me better than that, even if she never really understood me. Elland arrived at his rooms a few moments later. He stalked directly in, then opened his closet. The clothing Tyndall had chosen for him, the clothing of a king, waited inside.